Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
We made this.
Hi, this is Dean Haglund. I'm Langley from The X-Files, and you're listening to The X-Cast.
Hello and welcome back everyone to the X-Cast. The truth is in here, or maybe it's just a game. Because for this episode, and I of course am Tony Black, your host, I'm joined by one of my old favourite guests, Darren Mooney, to talk about Chris Carter's Harsh Realm. How you doing,
Yay!
Darren?
How are things? How's life, Tony?
Pretty good. Well, it was when I was talking about The X-Files, but now it seems like I'm talking about Harsh Realm, so I'm not sure it's going in the right direction.
Forwards is how it's going.
That's unfair. I think this is going to be a really interesting discussion, but it's good to have you back on the show. You've been a busy bee with film festivals and all kinds of things, haven't you?
And just sort of catching up and doing the post-Christmas sort of trying to catch up on everything I didn't do over Christmas, and trying to do the film festival, and actually now just getting used to kind of now things are going to be a bit more relaxing. All I've got to do is finish a second book, and we're just it's plain sailing from here. In the spirit of sort of Chris Carter X-Files podcasting, you know, keeping it mysterious, you know, we're going to draw it out. You'll think the book is one thing, then it'll turn out to be something else entirely. Then it'll turn out to actually be a play.
And it won't be completely finished because it'll get cancelled after 9 episodes or 9 chapters. It'll be finished right, stop right there.
Yeah. But it's okay because 6 of those chapters won't even air on Fox. Oh, how glorious Harsh Realm is, and just the story about Harsh Realm and the context of Harsh Realm and everything about Harsh Realm that isn't actually the show itself.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpick here, and we thought for this special podcast, which is originally a little bit of an exclusive for patrons of the X-Cast, but if you're listening to this after the fact, either way, you're going to be, I think, interested in Chris Carter's third show. So let's give you a little bit of a précis for Harsh Realm and what it is before we really start talking about it. Because previously we did The After, which was Chris Carter's most recent pilot episode he did for a different show before The X-Files came back for the revival series. But Harsh Realm was done way back in the distant mists of time, 1999, while The X-Files was still originally going, while Millennium had just come to an end, I think, on air. It was back in the heyday for Carter, really. So Harsh Realm is the name of a virtual world that has been created by the US Army in order to train war scenarios. It's like a war scenario program that seems to have been hijacked by the game's number one player, General Omar Santiago, played by, officially, my favorite actor in the world, Terry O'Quinn.
Nice! He's pretty great, but I'm not sure he'd be, like, the greatest ever actor in the world.
Well, it's more that he's my favourite ever actor. I don't think he's not De Niro, but...
Well, even De Niro isn't De Niro anymore.
Well, exactly, yeah. But I love Terry O'Quinn in everything he's ever done, I think. Right, I could watch that man all day. But yeah, he plays the villain, and on the other side of it, you've got a character called Thomas Hobbs, played by Scott Bairstow. Who is recruited to enter the game to take out Santiago, to destroy him in the virtual world, because they seem to be looking for him, the US military anyway, seem to be looking for him in the real world. And Hobbs is separated from his fiancée Sophie, goes into Harsh Realm, and soon finds he's pretty much trapped in order to explore this virtual world where Santiago has basically become Colonel Kurtz, essentially. He's gone off the reservation. So he partners up with a character called Mike Pinocchio. Yes.
Yes.
Pinocchio.
Pinocchio isn't even the first name you've mentioned that's Carter-esque. Like, General Santiago, Thomas Hobbes, entering a world of primitive savagery in which might is the only language worth understanding. In some ways, Harsh Realm is the most Carter-esque of shows, even though it only ran 9 episodes.
Yeah, it really is, even with the names. But yeah, Pinocchio is played by D.B. Sweeney, and it essentially becomes these two, plus a mute, mysterious sort of healer character called Florence, who end up exploring Harsh Realm in order to try and find and take down Santiago with the various other characters in the mix, and a real sort of interesting sort of fusion of the kind of sort of storytelling that Carter would do in the old days, of mythology, of standalone stories, and all these kind of things. So that's essentially the basic setup. It's the Harsh Realm is a little bit Matrix-y, maybe a little bit of The Prisoner. It's just it's a mix of stuff, and obviously going into all kinds of reference points. So, Darren, you've written extensively about this in the past. It formed part of your book, Opening the X-Files, which came out last year. Shameless little plug. You can buy
it. Thank you very much.
Because it's great and you want to buy it. Quite a few of our patrons have bought it, and we've been talking about it in the patron zone, saying how great the book is, and you know they're absolutely right.
Thanks, guys.
Darren, Harsh Realm. Are you a fan first and foremost of Carter's third series?
I think the issue is that it's very hard to be a fan of Harsh Realm, given that it only existed for 9 episodes. Right? If you cancelled the X-Files after 9 episodes, you would have ice.
Space? Oh my god!
You would end on space. That would be your last episode of the X-Files ever. God. And I mean, if you did the same with the first season of Millennium, you wouldn't even get to like the mid-season sort of where the change of gears with like Force Majeure and Thin White Line and stuff like that. Like you would have like Carter still figuring out the format of what he's doing, because I mean this is basically a half season order. And the first half season back in the old days of network television when you had 20 odd episodes, first half season was always just what the hell are we doing? Like if you go back and you don't even have to look at shows like big science fiction shows. If you look at stuff like say Friends or sitcoms like that, even in the first like 8 episodes, it's always Sunny in Philadelphia. You have a sense of writers going, well, oh my god, these are the characters we're doing, these are the concepts. How do we define the walls of the world that we're building, what are we going to do going forward? And like, so you know, you establish the ground rules and the texture of it, and like very few series back in the old days. Now it's obviously different now where you've got like 13 episodes and you know the whole season is basically like a book or a chapter of a book and it's all structured out beforehand, and you got The Wire, The Sopranos, stuff like that. But in the old days of network television, like very few shows would produce something particularly memorable in the first 8 episodes. And if they did, it was usually the pilot. So say Miami Vice has an amazing pilot and a really awkward then first half of the season where they're like, okay, so we have cool people in Miami. How do we make a show of that? And I think that when you watch Harsh Realm, you really get a sense of that, because it's really, you've got the first 3 episodes, which are basically a pilot in which Carter lays out over 3 weeks, and coincidentally, the only 3 episodes that aired on Fox. But you have Carter laying out in those first 3 episodes, like what the premise is of Harsh Realm is, because you have like, it's the point at which, you know, you have Sophie disappearing and you have Hobbs figuring out that he's stuck there, and you have the introduction of like Inga Thossa, who's presumably going to be a really key part of the mythology and stuff like that. And you have like, after those 3 episodes, that's like the mythology sort of established. It's like the pilot and Deep Throat and the X-Files, and then you have a range of like one shots that do things that Carter's particularly interested in doing and which are very thematically sort of tied back into things that interest Carter. And then you have a couple of like towards the end you have some like world building and mythology stuff, so you have like, you get to find out what made, you know, the world of Harsh Realm different from the world in which we live, given it's supposed to be a perfect simulation. You get to spend a bit more time with Santiago and get a sense of who he is, but at the same time you don't really, there's a sense the world was still being built when the curtain came down on it. There's a sense that, like, it's almost unfair to judge the show based on these 9 episodes, because they're not, I would argue, they're not particularly great. I don't think there's a great episode of television among them. I think there are some interesting ideas, and it's more interesting to sort of imagine what they might have been than to focus on what they were. And now, of course, I would argue the other thing with The Lone Gunman. I would say The Lone Gunman has like 3 great episodes in the 13-episode season. But yeah, this doesn't really, it feels more like a blueprint rather than an actual show, if that makes sense.
Yeah, completely, because I think if you look at The X-Files, as you mentioned, as a comparison, you know, you'd already had in the first 9 episodes of The X-Files, you'd had Squeeze, you'd had ice, you know, you'd had at least two. You know, a lot of people, I don't love the X-Files pilot like a lot of people love the X-Files pilot. I think it was good, and I think Deep Throat is really good as well. But I think you've got two classics for me, Squeeze and Ice, two great episodes that really sort of encapsulate the X-Files. Even now, even 25 years later, you know, you could point to either of those. You could point to Toombs. Look at Toombs. Toombs is easily the most iconic monster the X-Files ever did, really.
I would argue in that case, and I mean, even Glenn Morgan and James Wan would argue that, like, the thing with Toombs was that he didn't really come into his own until the second episode, Toombs. Like, the reason that they did Toombs was because they weren't happy with Squeeze. And I wonder, like, if you'd cut the show down after 9 episodes, would people be going, Toombs is an amazing monster, or would they be going, he's kind of an interesting monster?
Well, that's an interesting point, really, because, I mean, I think maybe they're a bit harsh on Squeeze. I think if I had to line the two of them up, I think I would probably prefer Squeeze over Toombs. But like a
few
people do. Well, I know. but it's true. You know, it's true. And that's if you think about it on those terms, the X-Files had already sort of, not always, not completely, it took them a good couple of seasons to really click into the formula, but they'd done it a couple of times already. They'd had these episodes that really stood out. You know, and with Millennium had quite a strong start as well. I wouldn't say that had the truly mind-blowing episode by episode 9, but it was a stronger run, whereas Harsh Realm just seems to not be able to figure out what it is, and it's taking a long time. And they admit this, don't they? They admit this on the DVD, you know, and when they're talking about it in the documentary, they're talking about how they didn't really completely, they were still playing with ideas over the first 9 episodes.
Yeah, and had no idea what it was supposed to be, which I can imagine must have been very comforting to Fox. And we'll talk about how Fox sort of reacted to the show, because that's its own story unto itself. Mm. But there is a real sense of, like, the writers having no idea what they were doing or where they were going sort of forward. Like, I mean, like, even if you look at, say, The Lone Gunman, which is its own 13 episode, like, you know, half season, possibly extended to a full season, although, you know, it'll end up being one season of 13 episodes. Like, that has a clear beginning, middle, and end, where, like, the writers, who are Spotnitz, Shaban, and Gilligan, figure out what they're doing over the course of those 13 episodes. And you get the sense at the end that they're a lot more comfortable than they were at the start. With this, it feels like, you know, you'd maybe have a better idea towards the end of the end of a 20-episode season than you do after 9 episodes. Like, at the end of the 9th episode, which is Camera Obscura, like, that's the point at which I feel like, oh, maybe I understand what's going on here, possibly. And it's like, I don't even understand, but I've been given a bit of context and information that allows me to make sense of what I've seen up to this point. And it doesn't, you're right, it doesn't really click. There's never really a moment, like, there's nothing as good as Ice in here, obviously. I would argue, I would say Toombs is better than Squeeze, but there's nothing as good as Squeeze in here. The 3 episodes that I talked about, the interlinking pilot, they're not as good as the first 2 episodes of Millennium, which are the pilot and Gehenna, which are just 2 phenomenal pieces of television. And even, as you're right to say, the pilot of the X-Files and Deep Throat together, these 9 episodes don't gel in that way. Now, it when you're watching it, it feels bad to say that because it's 9 episodes. If you were to judge anybody, you know, based on their output of 9 episodes of television, it would seem unfair and harsh. And I mean, who knows, there's some alternative world where we're talking about, like, Harsh Realm is now entering its, like, 18th, 19th season. it's beloved by millions around the world. No, I can't imagine a world where that would happen for various reasons, but yeah, it's strange to try and make sense of it.
Well, a major reason it seems like it would be hard to imagine. I mean, I know 18, 19 seasons is, you know, is a joke, although Supernatural seems to be heading that way. but Supernatural has it's a good example because it has a very stock formula. You know, it has two brothers investigating the paranormal on the road, done, right? You can just redo that, repurpose.
Yeah.
Harsh Realm, it very immediately, because it's Chris Carter, and Chris Carter can't really just do a normal, straightforward show. He has to layer it with all kinds of subtext, mythology, conceptual ideas. So immediately, he's got a premise which doesn't fit into a box. It doesn't fit into a, oh, this week the guys go and do this, or this week the guys go and do that, even though it kind of tries to do that in a way, and it doesn't quite work. So you, straight away, you think to yourself, well, this is a finite idea, you know, in theory. Once they kill Santiago and Hobbs gets back to Sophie, game over. Whereas the X-Files, in theory, could run, and it has.
It has.
It could run and run and run, you know. And so this, unlike
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Especially the X-Files. Millennium, I think, sort of sits in the middle. But unlike that, Harsh Realm has an end point. But you've got to have a good starting point. You've got to have a logical starting point and be able to tell a framework of where these stories go. And it didn't seem to be able to get a handle on that even after 9 episodes.
Yeah, it really just seems like it's a collection of things that vaguely interest Chris Carter thematically. Like, I mean, I have a sense of what, like, each individual episode is about. And I have a sense of, like, maybe what Carter was doing in a big picture sense, in that, like, he's obviously it's a virtual reality thing, and it's all tied into, it's interesting to look at, say, the X-Files at around the same time, which would have been the 7th season, where you would have had a lot of these augmented or virtual reality stories. I mean, obviously, like Amor Fati, for example, in Biogenesis, where Mulder sort of goes into this dream world and lives his alternate life. You have First Person Shooter coming up around the same time, which is like Mulder and Scully go into like a prototype of Harsh Realm almost. But you have this sort of fascination with like virtual and nested reality in Carter's writing, even looking at stuff like the X-Files, and it fits within that context. And you have a whole bunch of other stuff that randomly happens over the season that is recognizably Carter doing stuff that he likes to do. So you have like this weird religious subtext, which has never been as strong in the X-Files as it is during the 7th season, is also very strong in Harsh Realm, because like one of the many things, and over this course of the podcast I'm gonna keep saying, it's gonna be like one of those phrases I'm gonna return to, one of the things that Harsh Realm is about in its 9 episodes is that it's about imagining a world that was made by man. There's Manus Domine, which is one of the episodes, which basically lays out the thesis that what makes Harsh Realm such a horrible, horrible place populated by terrible people who do terrible things is because it's a world constructed by the hand of man rather than the hand of the divine, which is a Chris Carter thing that he's interested in. And you also have this push westwards throughout the show as well, which presents like a fictionalized history of the United States. It's like, it's a virtual reality TV show, but it's also kind of a Western, except it's somehow in an alternate universe that is maybe like the future. So you have like Cincinnati, which has like a Native American subplot. You have a slavery episode, for example, where the gang are forced to like, I like that I refer to them as the gang, as if we have any sense of who these people are, but where they're forced to work in like a slave labor camp for Tobin Bell. you have a sense that like the show is broadly like it's Carter doing stuff that interests Carter, but you're right when you say like, what is the formula here? Like, what is the quantum leap? If this show had, like, during the opening credits, had a monologue that actually didn't just explain that this is a virtual reality world, that actually said, this is what we're doing this week, what would it be? Would it be like Hobbs and Pinocchio help random strangers? Is it like The Incredible Hulk, where they just travel the countryside? Is it like the A-Team, where if you have a problem and no one else can help? But it doesn't have that. And you're right when you say that it's halfway between like having a serialization drive, because it is. It's basically, where in the virtual world is Omar Santiago? And it's it's like, you're right that the premise is like, they go in, they find Santiago, they kill Santiago, they get out, he reunites with Sophie, and maybe there's some stuff about the mystery that, you know, the relationship between the real world and the world of Harsh Realm, which is suggested to be recursive, maybe, I don't know, because this is a Chris Carter show. But you have this sort of like idea that you have this mission, and you accomplish this mission, and so every episode in the season, in theory, should be building towards this, because it's a very, like, your end point, it's like Westworld or Game of Thrones. You have a clear end point for the season that you should be building towards, which, to be clear, is a remarkable thing to be doing on Fox in 1999. But it's very clear that Carter, like, has no idea what he's doing with it. It's like, it's an even more serialized concept than, and you're right when you point out the X-Files and Millennium, because like, the X-Files big mythology arc is, well, you know, the end of Deep Throat, where Deep Throat says they've been here for a very long time. And that gives Carter the option to go absolutely anywhere he wants to go with it at that moment in time. Like, it's an open book. Or Millennium, which suggests that, you know, evil is at work in the world, and maybe there's something behind it, but we're going to keep it vague and ambiguous. So, like, every episode doesn't have to feed into this overarching mystery. Whereas, like, this is like Apocalypse Now meets The Matrix in the Old West, but also somehow the future. And it's like, okay, your job is to go in there and kill Omar Santiago. And it's like, okay, it's not to like contemplate the nature of our existence or something big. No, it's like you have a solid three-act structure. You go in, you get lost, you find him, you kill him. That's your story here. And Harsh Realm doesn't do any of that. There's like, after those first three episodes, it just meanders through these really weird plots with snow globes and Tobin Bell and Native Americans and Romeo and Juliet, but with nuclear weapons in New York. It's I have no idea what this is.
The point is, I think, had it been made now, and I know we, you know, it's easy to do this with a lot of things, you know, had the X-Files been made now, it probably would look very different. You can do that with a lot of shows, but I think Harsh Realm is a particularly good example to do that, because, you know, you mentioned Westworld, for example. Now, Westworld isn't exactly the same, but there's certain ideas in Westworld that sort of cross over in a way, that link. It's this idea of a virtual world, essentially, you know, and ideas of what is reality and all this kind of stuff. So even though it's a different show, that is a very serialized show, you know. And imagine, I mean, the comparison is, imagine if Westworld had a format where it had 22 episodes and you had, like, the Man in Black going off, or... I don't know what the main... can't remember what the main character's name in Westworld is.
Dolores, isn't it?
Yeah, it might be, yeah. Yeah, Dolores. And they're just going off having, like, random adventures in the Old West, you know? And then they come back to a two-part mythology episode, and then they go off again, and, you know, it becomes, like, I don't know, the OK Chaparral or whatever. It's just like, well, you would totally see that very differently. It would be a massively different kind of show, and arguably I don't think it would work half as well. So I think if you had Harsh Realm, if it had been able to sort of work in that context, you might have found it could have had a 10 to 13 episode season where it just hits all the beats. You know, an episode like Cincinnati would be like your fourth episode as opposed to your eighth episode, you know, and you'd be able to get into, or maybe even your third episode, you know, you would be able to get into all these ideas very quickly. And by the end of season one, if it seems to be building towards Santiago launching an attack on the real world, which the suggestion is it was, that's where you get to in like 10, 13 episodes, as opposed to 22, where...
22 12... if you're lucky.
Like, well, if you're lucky, yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like this could be like a fourth or fifth season finale sort of premise. It's like the first...
Well, yeah.
Because the way it's structured, you have, and again, this is something like the X-Files, where you have these standalone episodes and these mythology episodes. It seems like your first season finale on this show would be like, oh my god, Santiago is planning to invade the real world. And your second season finale would be, oh my god, Santiago finally has the equipment he needs to launch the attack on the real world. And you would build incredibly slowly through that. Whereas, yeah, it just feels like, there's two shows, there's two shows within Harsh Realm, one of which is, like, where in the world is Omar Santiago, and the second one is the show that nobody has any idea what it is, but somehow takes up, like, four of the nine episodes that were made.
And it's really odd, because that's the thing, it's not odd. In the context of the time it was made, it isn't odd at all. You know, this was 99, this was when... They hadn't quite reached the point where a lot of genre storytelling was starting to take place in a, you know, we hadn't had cable properly coming in yet. We hadn't had streaming. Certainly not for these, you know, genre shows. Genre storytelling was still in this very 90s, late 80s box of quite a lot of episodes in a season and standalone mythology, and not many, you know, Babylon 5 is probably one of the few exceptions to that rule, really, on the whole. And even that had the odd episode that was standalone, certainly in the early seasons.
I mean, even in this case, you got to keep in mind the context of this. Like, The Sopranos was still several months away from launching on HBO, which was a cable network. So it wasn't like Fox, it wasn't competing with ABC and CBS. And like, it's worth You mentioned that there when you talk about like the power of cable as it was happening in the late 90s and like the sort of transition that network TV is going through. The context of Harsh Realm is that like it aired at a time when Fox, which was the fourth network, the long gestating, long rumored, long speculated about during the 80s, sort of fourth network managing to break the glass ceiling, had basically hired Doug Herzog, who was this guy who'd done Comedy Central. And Herzog is a legend at Comedy Central, and like his name is spoken in revered terms because he's responsible, for example, for giving Jon Stewart The Daily Show, which, you know, is now like the benchmark for, you know, people talk about politics but funny shows that go up to like John Oliver and the Colbert Report and stuff like that, and on, you know, that entire subgenre, Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, right? And you even have stuff like South Park, which came up on Comedy Central under Herzog's tenure and which is still running. Like, we were joking about running 18 seasons, like, you know. But and then you have stuff like so you basically, Herzog was like the king of cable, and he was drafted over to Fox in 1999 with the idea being that maybe network television was ready for like something a bit more adventurous and a bit more exciting. And so what Herzog did was he commissioned this whole slate of new and exciting shows. So, for example, he did Action, starring Jay Moore as a Hollywood producer, Peter Dragon, I believe his name was. And he commissioned like Real Life, which starred Sarah Paulson and Jesse Eisenberg, who would go on to be hugely famous afterwards. And they all bombed because primetime network television was not ready for something like serialized or something adventurous in terms of format in 1999. They all bombed. And I mean, that's the reason why you have the 8th season of The X-Files, because like Fox got itself in such a state during that 1999 season under Herzog trying to bring a cable boutique aesthetic to television, that the only shows Fox had standing at the end of the 99 season were The Simpsons and The X-Files. Because network television was not ready for anything adventurous or exciting. And I think that's, like, when you look at why Harsh Realm is the way it is, that's a large part of that. There was no way to do a serialized show in the way that you're talking about at the time.
And it's a shame in the sense of if that had been possible, Harsh Realm could have been very different. But then the question is whether or not that, I mean, Chris Carter, even now, you know, as he's doing The X-Files, he still really hasn't embraced the idea of serialized storytelling. You know, The X-Files, the new season of The X-Files, there are as many standalones. You know, there's a few recurring, you know, consistent threads, but there are certain episodes that are completely standalone from the others. And so even now, he still doesn't tell stories in that kind of way, because he wants to tell stories that can be more self-contained, can be an allegory, can be a parable, can be all these different things. I mean, the most recent episode, as we record, Followers, which was the two-ander between Mulder and Scully, that's a parable, you know, that is a parable. And it's, you know, you've got all those different things in play. So he doesn't want to tell a story in that sense. So I don't know if he would do Harsh Realm differently. I think he might do it in a similar way. But I think the problem it had, as you said, was the place.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
In time it was aired, the ideas being maybe a little bit overreaching in that sense. Also, I think it suffered from, you know, and you've said this in your reviews, and I completely agree, it suffered from a really bland leading actor. And that was something that The X-Files and Millennium, neither of them had that. They had really compelling leads. This doesn't.
Well, I mean, I would argue that the lead character in some ways in Harsh Realm, they are the most Carter, Chris Carter-esque of lead characters in some, if you put them on paper, in that they are lovers who are like chivalrous. They're sort of separated by time and space. Like Sophie, Sophie and Hobbs are married, but they're sort of divided from one another and they're kept apart. And so you have that sort of like longing across time and space without actually acting on it, which is very much like a Chris Carter thing. I think Todd Vanderwerf, who used to write at the AV Club, who now writes at Vox, like gave this wonderful summation of how Carter writes romance, where he's like, even when you're watching a Carter show, even married people can't have sex without bad things happening to them. and that is very much how Carter seems to write. So like, on paper, this idea of Hobbs being separated from the woman he loves and having to journey not only across the world, but across several worlds to find her is very Carter-esque in principle. But it's just, I would argue that you're right when you say it doesn't have a charismatic lead, because like, on paper, the romance between Mulder and Scully, like as it's actually played out across the run of the show, if you just reduced it to like text summaries or like one line synopsis of what happens, it would seem rather cold and it would make no sense. It's like, is William is William their son? Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. Let's not talk about the new season because that's a whole like different kettle of fish. But you have that sort of, or even like Frank Black, who is like, you know, this man who stands, you know, against evil in the world, protecting his family, despite the fact that it seems like, you know, his wife might as well be his like platonic college roommate. But you, yeah. You have this like, because Carter got extremely lucky with casting, with both the X-Files, with Anderson and Duchovny, and like you pointed out, the last episode was a two-hander, like that's how comfortable you are with Duchovny and Anderson, that you can just have them hang out on screen together by themselves for, you know, 45 minutes, you're like, that's enough for me. Or even like Millennium, which I adore Millennium, and I think Lance Henriksen is phenomenal in it. I think Lance Henriksen is perfectly cast, and he brings so much to Frank Black. And I would argue that, like, he is the bridge between, like, the show changes form repeatedly over the course of its run, but Henriksen is the glue that holds it together as much as it's possible to do so. The issue with Harsh Realm, one of the issues with Harsh Realm, is you're right when you say Barstow has nothing. He's a charisma vacuum. He's a piece of wood. D.B. Sweeney seems like a nice guy from interviews and press that he's done, but he doesn't really have the same, he doesn't really have any gravitas or any sort of like, he's kind of meant to be sort of a bad boy, but not really, but he doesn't have that sort of edge to him. And you have even, like, apparently Robert Patrick was considered for the role.
I think he'd have been better, actually, because I think he could have brought that gravitas you mentioned, really.
I think he would have. I mean, like, look at Doggett. Doggett is another example of a character on paper who seems very Carter-esque in that he's very stoic, he's very reserved, he's not very emotionally open. But you get the line readings from Patrick, and you get the little wry sense of humour, and you get the sort of, like, you know, the earnestness beneath the seriousness, which sells it. And none of the characters in here really have that. And I mean, like, one of the interesting things is the casting on Harsh Realm. You have a whole bunch of interesting supporting actors. Like, you described Terry O'Quinn as your favorite actor, and he is phenomenal. But he barely appears in the 9 episodes that are aired. Like, you get a sense that if he'd been a series regular, okay, well, first of all, you would have to figure out what to do with him every week, which would have been a massive problem, given the show's format. But he would have had a bit more weight and gravity than any of the other members of the cast, or even, is it Sarah Jane Redmond, who plays Inga Fossa? Like, she's great. She popped up, obviously, over from Millennium as well, and seems to have sort of, like, been sort of incorporated into Carter's little troupe of actors. He also has Gillian Anderson and Lance Henriksen sort of come over to wish the show well. Duchovny, who was in the middle of a lawsuit, didn't quite get an invitation to the party, understandably so. But you have this sort of sense that the people around the leads are much more interesting than the leads themselves. And I mean, nothing that you see in these episodes makes them interesting or compelling or fascinating.
Yeah, it's got that central problem, really. I mean, I think Pinocchio's a fun character, and I think without him, you wouldn't be able to survive just on Hobbs. You know, he does keep Hobbs on what rails he is on.
But a man does not live on Hobbs alone.
God, not in this show. It would be a really soul-sucking experience. So Pinocchio does at least have that sort of you know, cheeky charm, levity about him. So he manages to imbue it with the odd, you know, funny line, the odd witticism and things like that. But it doesn't have those characters that immediately grab you, that immediately make you invested in the world. And you're right, the more interesting people you don't see very often. You know, Inga Fosser is a fascinating, you know, sort of Lady Macbeth / Mata Hari kind of character. You know, she's this mysterious woman
who has her own agenda.
Her own agenda, you know, like some of the characters you've seen in other things, like, you know, she's a little bit Marita Covarrubias in The X-Files and things like that. You know, there's an interesting character there. Interestingly enough as well, she might appear in I Want to Believe.
Oh,
as a
I
nice
heard
little
this, yes.
wink in that there's a character that Sarah Jane Redmond does like a walk-on part in I Want to Believe, the movie,
yeah.
as a character called Fosser. And I think it's nothing more than a little wink and a nudge to Harsh Realm. But, you know, in my head canon, I like to think that, you know, Inga Fosser is part of the conspiracy. And they should have brought her in for season 11. I think that would have been great.
Well, I mean, you say that as if, like, this isn't one of the sort of recurring themes that's sort of bubbling beneath season 11 as well. The idea of there being virtual realities or nested realities or whatever, you know?
Well, yeah, maybe they're all just going to be in Harsh Realm and that's the big reveal at the end.
That is the big twist. It's like,
Imagine
how disappointing that would be to, like, the, you know, the Bring Back Frank Black Brigade, of which I am member, who's been, like, campaigning for, like, a millennium revival and resurrection for, like, God knows how many years. Well, actually, I know 18 years now. And like, all of a sudden, the big twist at the end of season 11 is that another Chris Carter property is coming back, and it's Harsh Realm.
The whole revival of The X-Files has been a soft reboot for Harsh Realm. Yeah. That is a brilliant conspiracy theory. I'm promoting that now.
Yeah.
But it is something he's still interested in, definitely, you know, and he's weaving that in with a lot of, you know, a Black Mirror kind of inspiration. Certainly Glenn Morgan especially has that, you know, inspiration there. But so a lot of these ideas have never really left him, but it is that problem with Harsh Realm in that there are so many good ideas, there are so many interesting ideas, you know, and a lot of the individual episodes, you know, once you go past the first three, as you say, that form like a sort of connected long pilot, you've got episodes like Kein Ausgang, the fourth episode, which is where it's a World War II scenario that's on a
within
loop.
Within there, yes.
Which
you're watching this and going, what the hell is this show?
Right, yeah. And you're like, eh? You know, in theory, they could have recreated all kinds of war scenarios. You know, they could have had them end up in, you know, the Spartans, you know, in ancient Greece, or they could have had them in Vietnam and, you know, Waterloo and all these random things. And it could have been quite eccentric in that sense. Who knows? Who knows what they could have done? But the idea, I think, was that there are lots of components to this world. And I think the idea of the world building behind it is really interesting. There's lots of different, you know, there's like a nuclear bombed New York. There's the countryside where you've got mysterious healing sisters, you know, you've got weird sort of village cults which are cannibalizing people, all kinds of stuff. And it's like, well, you've got this real world here, but what is the show?
How does it all fit together?
Yeah, exactly.
It does in some ways, though. Like, I mean, it does feel very Carter-esque in that, like, I mean, you can draw a very clear connection between certain ideas that Carter's been playing with. So, for example, the entire premise of the show, as you pointed out, you know, Santiago is basically Colonel Kurtz, which makes this, like, obviously Apocalypse Now, which is the ultimate Vietnam movie, with no disrespect to Full Metal Jacket. And it's like, that is again something that Carter has been very interested in throughout his work. He's very much informed by Vietnam, and he's talked about this in interviews and stuff like that. Vietnam sort of left a lingering sort of mark on his psyche and on the American psyche, and he's very keen to explore that, and The X-Files sort of touches on that as well. You have stuff like The Three Percenters, which is the cannibalistic village episode that you mentioned, which is written by Frank Spotnitz, which is basically Our Town, but with lines of code instead of, like, you know, Second World War survivors and so like that. And you have this whole thing that runs through the show, like, you have this aesthetic that goes through, like, the Western. So you have the interest, like, the Native Americans who live within the simulation, who are mounting their own rebellion in Cincinnati, which sort of comes along to what Carter was doing in The X-Files with, you know, Alfred Holston, for example, and stuff like that, and the, like, Anasazi and that sort of stuff that was happening. And you have this whole sort of stuff that interests Carter playing out and sort of bubbling and simmering through. Like, there, you could make an argument that what Santiago is doing is very similar to what the conspirators are doing in the actual X-Files, where they are, like, shadow government ruling the world and reshaping it in their interests, and that they've created this invisible sort of conspiracy theory world that Mulder and Scully have to navigate and explore. And like Harshrealm just literalizes that by, instead of having it be like a metaphorical world of like conspiracies and sort of like connections and like this sort of metaphor for like manifest destiny and the American sort of psyche and sort of the landscape of that. Instead, what Harshrealm does is, okay, let's literalize that by setting it in a computer. So you can do stuff like, you can have the slavery episode, you can have the cannibal episode, you can have the strange religious nun episode, you can have the Romeo and Juliet with a priest played by Robert Nepper and a nuclear bomb in New York episode. And you can sort of, you can do this stuff in a very abstract way. And like, it is undeniably a Chris Carter creation. And it should be noted that this aired in late 1999, which was around the time that like pop culture was obsessed with these things. And like Carter was very much like, I would argue Carter's one of the greatest like creative minds of like the 90s in pop culture, and that he understood the psychology of the 90s and the popular zeitgeist and stuff like that. And I think that you can see that when you look at his shows. Obviously The X-Files, you know, is the most obvious one because that just channeled into, that encapsulates a decade for many people. But even stuff like, say, Millennium in many ways like reflects the impact that movies like, you know, Kiss the Girl, Single White Female, Silence of the Lambs, sort of all those movies had on popular culture at the same time. This arrived in 1999, around the time of The Matrix, and they talk a lot about this on the special features. Like Frank Spotnitz is like, we were so screwed when The Matrix came out, and Chris Carter's like, actually William Gibson said that the Matrix was a great $200 million trailer for Harshrealm, and you're like, okay, I can, that's a bit of a pitch, but I can go for it. But you do have like, around this time you had all these movies like, say, The 13th Floor, even The Truman Show, you had Dark City, you had this whole idea at like the end of the 90s, this question of like what reality is. And like Carter was very engaged. I pointed out the stuff that he was doing in The X-Files at the same time, but Carter was very much engaged with this idea of like, is that sort of Plato's cave analogy, the idea of like, is the world that we're living in actually the real world, or is it just something that we have metaphorically confused, you know, with the real world? And that's sort of like, is it simulacrum, I think is what Bouillard calls it. I'm terrible with pronunciations. I apologize for anybody listening who knows what I'm talking about. But the idea that, like, as you reach the millennium, you had this idea of, like, creating something that was, to quote Bono and Coke, even better than the real thing. You had this idea of, like, a simulated fake world. And it doesn't have to be a literal fake world, like virtual reality in this case. But you had this idea of not knowing what was real and genuine and concrete and serious and, like, actually meaningful in the world, which is something that Carter comes back to repeatedly. Like, Harshrealm is just the most literal embodiment of that sort of that trope or that theme, in that it is a virtual world. And like, even in the show itself, like, for example, I think in the pilot you have the graffiti from Harshrealm that seems to show up in the real world. In, like, I think Reunion, you have this weird suggestion that somehow maybe Hobbs's mother is connected to him, even though he's inside the video game, and there's a snow globe, so maybe the game exists in the real world and the real world exists in the game. There's a sort of weird nested way of knowing that even the real world that Sophie's in. And I actually wonder, this is like one of my pet theories, and it's impossible to know going into like Harshrealm, or, you know, 9 episodes of it, I wonder if Carter would have built the idea that the world that Sophie's in is not the real world either. But you have this sort of like playful, is anything real? Which is quite clever and very timely, I think.
It sounds a bit Inception, that does, actually. Worlds within worlds within worlds.
We're going deeper.
Yeah, exactly. It could be. It could be. I think, interestingly as well, this wasn't entirely Chris Carter's original concept. This came from a comic book, very loosely based on a comic book by two writers called James D. Hudnall and Andrew Paquette, who then launched a lawsuit against Carter and made him put on the DVDs their credit for creating the original comic book of Harshrealm, which seems to be very different. It was like a gumshoe entering a very, very
Middle
Eastern
world. It's a middle-aged sort of swords and sorcery sort of thing.
But he took that idea of this place. He took the name. He took a basic, you know, idea. And it's interesting that it wasn't his own creation. He's played down the comic book stuff a lot, which is funny, because I think, again, had he made it today, he wouldn't have been so quiet about the comic book tethers. And he may well have made something a little bit more faithful, given how much comic books have become much more
of a cultural currency.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's interesting the way he sort of played that down as well.
Well, I mean, Carter does that quite a bit. He's like, when he talks about his influences, he tends to downplay the role that the comic books have sort of played in inspiring his writing and his work and stuff. And I mean, I think I've talked to Chris Knowles about this, probably on the podcast as well, where he's discussed like Carter's writing in many ways could be seen as like a spiritual successor of like the early comic book work of, I would argue, Chris Claremont, but I think that Chris Knowles has suggested that Stan Lee is a good pointer as well. This sort of like the idea of overlaying the images with this sort of purple prose, sort of true believer, sort of like monologues that you associate with Carter is very much something that maybe, you know, you could trace or draw a connection back to the sort of comic books that would have been around when he was younger. So I'm not surprised that there's maybe an influence of the comic book here, although I do think Carter was very, very, very adamant going in, before he settled the lawsuit, before the Turners were put in the DVD, that he didn't copy, that he didn't plagiarize. And so I am curious about that. But I mean, the whole production of Harsh Realm was a nightmare from beginning to end for everybody involved in it. In terms of, you obviously, I suspect, you know, and anybody who's listening probably has a rough idea of what happened. But to give a sense of this, right? So Carter, a couple of years before Harsh Realm was launched, Carter inked a deal with Fox for somewhere between $25 and $30 million to develop a I know. He was basically the Shonda Rhimes of like 90s Fox.
Yeah.
Or the Ryan Murphy of 90s
the
Fox.
Ryan Murphy, yeah. Yeah.
But the idea was that Carter, because Carter had done The X-Files, and The X-Files was like the biggest show on Fox, with the possible exception of The Simpsons, that he would then develop a slate of shows, and as far as the executives were concerned, like he would keep striking gold, and he'd produce this whole range of like spin-offs. You'd have like Carterland, which would be like a whole block of 3 hours of programming that would be like, you know, The X-Files and Millennium and, you know, Harsh Realm and Lone Gunman or something like that, and you'd air them in like, you know, that would be, you wouldn't have to worry about, you know, Sunday nights or Friday nights or whatever. That would be that taken care of. And what happened is that it didn't quite work that way, in that Millennium took off. It had massive ratings in its, when it launched, and then it sort of dwindled over the first season, then it sort of died a slow death over the second and third. When he launched Harsh Realm, interesting enough, Carter's argued that Fox were on the bubble about cancelling Millennium coming out of its third season. And what convinced them to cancel Millennium, ironically enough, was that they thought that Harsh Realm was going to be such a huge hit. And in fact, like, Fox were very enthusiastic about Harsh Realm. And you can understand why they would be. It's a Chris Carter show, and it's about computers. And kids love computers, right? And I mean, it's hip and it's modern. It's like The Matrix is this big movie that's coming out. It's going to be huge. And you can see why Fox would, in theory, get very excited about that. Obviously, before they saw what it was. But, like, a lot of what happened with Harsh Realm had little to do with the quality of what the show was. Like, when they were doing press before it was released, like, the expectation was that the seventh season of The X-Files would be the end of the show. It would be, like, the point at which Anderson and Duchovny would, you know, settle out, and then they go off and they do, like, one movie every 2 or 3 or 5 years and, you know, cash a nice check, earn Fox a bit of money, and, you know, do the projects that they want to do and become movie stars and that sort of thing. And the idea was that, you know, after that, Harsh Realm would sort of slot in. And like, there was really bullish interviews speaking with like people off the record on the part of Fox, where they're like, yeah, we see it. What we're going to do is we're going to launch it on like Friday nights in its first season. And then what we're going to do in its second season is we're going to move it into the Sunday slot. That'll be vacated by the X-Files, and it'll just be plain sailing from there. And there's this huge sort of sense that like, the idea was that they were grooming Harsh Realm to be the new X-Files. And then what happens is a spectacular disaster. They bring in Doug Herzog, who I mentioned earlier. His first season, one of the first things that he does is he sabotages Harsh Realm. And like, it's interesting to read Carter interviews about Harsh Realm, because Carter is very level-headed in interviews. Carter is very mannered, he's very respectful, he's you know, he's a guy who understands that you are polite and you don't say mean things about people in interviews, because people will remember that you said mean things about them in interviews, and it will make it very difficult for you to work with them. I mean, Gilligan does something similar as well. Like, there's like, for all the, you know, headline grabbing quotes that you get from executives and stars and stuff, a lot of people who work in the industry or are professionals understand that you're generally polite when you talk about the people you work with. And Carter is one of those. And Carter, like, is generally, if you read his interviews when he talks about Fox, like, even when Fox make decisions that he's not happy with, so for example, in the fourth season, moving the show from Friday nights to Sunday nights, which he was not happy about at the time, even in interviews, he was like, you know, well, we'll see how it goes. I mean, you know, they've been good to us, you know, that sort of stuff. When it comes to Harsh Realm, he's been very candid in what Carter and what Spotnitz believe happened to the show, which was that Doug Herzog was brought in as the new chief of programming. He wanted to make his mark on the network. And what happens is when you bring in new people to run networks or to run studios in Hollywood, is that the immediate thing that they do is they, A, try to establish their own brand. And Herzog did that by commissioning shows that we talked about, like, for example, Action or Real Life. But you also then have them try and marginalize the work of their predecessors because, you know, A, if those shows fail, they don't want them to fail on their watch because they'll be blamed for them. And B, if those shows succeed, then they'll be deemed to have coasted on the success of somebody who had already sort of established a brand. You know, people would say, well, you didn't make your mark. You just basically got lucky because the guy before you commissioned X. And you can argue there's a lot of conspiracy theory stuff about, like, for example, Paramount's optioning of Annihilation this year to Netflix, which is being released around the time that we're recording on Netflix in the UK and Ireland. And one of the reasons it's been speculated that that's happening is because the studio is trying to, like, burn off the last work of Brad Grey, who was the chief executive responsible for it, who is no longer with the company. And I think there's some speculation that what happened with John Carter of Mars at Disney is a similar story, where somebody who had greenlit and shepherded the project so far had lost their job. And the idea was that you would, you know, you wanted it released quietly so as to burn it off without making that big a fuss. So basically, Herzog decided that they would air Harsh Realm out of season just before the start of the season, and they would air it on Friday night when nobody would be watching, with baseball was happening at the same time as well. And the show lasted 3 episodes in that slot. It earned the lowest ratings that Fox had ever had on a Friday night to that point. No advertising, no branding, no marketing, no billboards, no publicity. And I mean, Spotnitz goes into this on the DVDs. He talks about, like, the sheer humiliation. Like, he recalls that he was getting, like, himself and Carter were receiving phone calls from hires up at the executive saying, whoa, what happened here? How did this happen? Look, it's okay. We'll get it sorted. We'll get you in a more comfortable slot. We'll fix this. We're very sorry. We understand this is our oversight. And then after 3 episodes, it's cancelled. And again, it should be noted, the last 6 episodes of the show all aired on FX, like in April 2000, you know, which is basically FX being the sort of burn off, like, it's not FX now where you get shows like Fargo, it's FX, which is like the network that Duchovny was currently, like, suing Fox for and Carter for trying to sell X-Files reruns to at a cheap price in order to boost its ratings. So it really was like an embarrassing sort of spectacle for them. And Carter, for a little while afterwards, was really, really bitter about it. And understandably so, if you pour your heart into something and the network treat it the way they did. Like, he talks about how, like, he had another show in his contract to develop. And I think it's telling, perhaps, the show that was developed by Carter after Harsh Realm was Lone Gunman, which was a direct spin-off of The X-Files, which was nothing that he'd ever wanted to do before, but it was also overseen by people who weren't Carter. It was overseen by Spotnitz, Shaban, and Gilligan, which I think, you know, you could see as Carter, like, not being particularly interested in the show and more being interested in giving people he trusted the opportunity to do something. And he talked about how, like, going forward after what happened with Harsh Realm, he would have trouble trusting Fox with any original idea that he had, because he couldn't trust that they would treat it, like, with respect and decency. And I mean, even afterwards, when Herzog got fired, when Herzog got, you know, the worst season in television history, by the accountings in the press, like, Carter practically sort of boasting on, you know, on interviews, talking about how, well, the guy who cancelled us got himself cancelled, so I'm feeling pretty good right now. Which is remarkable. It's a really strange, sad story about what happened. Yeah. Like, I mean, the failure of Harsh Realm is why we have an 8th season of The X-Files.
Yeah, so, you know, and in some respects, that's not a bad thing, but at the same time, it's disappointing that we didn't get more Millennium off the back of this and things like that. So it's a fascinating story about something that they just for whatever reason, all the stars didn't align with Harsh Realm. And I think, you know, as I'm listening to you talk about that, I'm thinking to myself, well, imagine going back to the present day. Imagine if they'd signed a deal with a Netflix or something like that, or an Amazon. They would have given them 10, 13 episodes straight off the bat. There would have been no wait and see how it does. They would have been able to plan the whole thing out. You would have had even if it was just one season, you know, you might have had a season with a complete arc, you know. Although the chances are, Netflix, they love recommissioning things half the time, so as much as they love cancelling them. So, you know, it could well have been ran for a couple of years. It could have had the space to develop. And it is a shame. It's understandable in a way, because I think that lots of people misjudged the whole thing, really. But the question is, and we're going to... We've got some... questions from listeners and some comments from listeners, and one of them is about where it would go next, and that's the question from...
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Adam Silver, one of our patrons, who asked us what are your theories on where the plot, characters, etc. would go next. What do you think, Darren? And you know, in some of your reviews, you've hinted at some of these things, and you've taken a little bit of a pot shot of where it might have gone. But what season one finale, by that point, where would we have been?
I don't know. I suspect by season one finale, you probably would have ended up with like a higher and clearer definition of stakes, because you've got to keep in mind that with the season one finale of The X-Files, you had, you know, Mulder and Scully, you know, Mulder ringing Scully to let her know that the X-Files was basically over, that the X-Files was sort of shut down, that they'd been shut down, and that, you know, things were not going to be the same going forward. And then, you know, look at the first season of Millennium, which ends with, you know, Catherine being kidnapped, you know, for example, which is a real, like, stakes-changing sort of game. And even, like, before, you know, the beginning of the second season, you have a sense that maybe this is tied into the Millennium Group and stuff like that. So I wouldn't have been surprised to see, like, a gelling and a coming together at the end of the first season, where you would have had, basically, this is Santiago is planning to attack the real world, and this is exactly how he's going to do it, or something like that, or, you know, some sort of massive reveal of some sort of twist of kind of stakes. I can't imagine what the twist would be. Because I can't imagine, I sort of speculated a bit when I was watching the show that one of the big twists would be that what we think is the real world is not actually the real world. But I can't see that being like a first season ending twist. That feels more like something you hint at and you sort of develop and you play with like over the course of a later season. But I can imagine it being, well, look, this is what Santiago is planning to do now.
One of the things I wondered was, in order to get Santiago more in the story and have these characters connect more to him, could it have been that season two would have seen Hobbs and Pinocchio having to go and work with or for him in some respects? So the whole idea of killing him is sort of put on the back burner. So maybe they get some more information. You know, it could well have been that the real world were just as great an enemy as Santiago. And I kind of feel like it could have gone one of two ways. It could have been that Santiago continues to do these horrible plans, but it could have been you could have found out that, you know, Lance Henriksen's general was a bad guy, you know, that kind of thing. They have to work with Santiago. That whole inversion of the old whole idea that started off with them going in to kill him, and in the end they have to work with him. And that could have added to more. There could have been more with them to do with Inga, you know, and Waters, and you could have had a whole more interesting scenario where they may be going off doing missions for Santiago, but there's that whole idea of, we're still supposed to be here to kill him, but, you know.
I mean, you could also even have, like, that plot that Carter's quite fond of having with villains or with foils, and he did it a bit in, say, with the cigarette smoking man in the X-Files, and he, you know, arguably did in the third season a little bit with the character who was played by Terry O'Quinn, who was, what's his name, Peter...
Peter Watts
in the third season when he became a villain, but he became a villain who was sometimes sort of helpful when he was humbled. And I can imagine something similar happening in kind of Harsh Realm, where Santiago is sort of suddenly, you know, sort of like humbled and deposed or whatever, but finds himself forced to work with Hobbes and with Pinocchio in that respect, rather than them working for him. It's more like, you know, he's down on his luck. They need him for something, and so they end up having some sort of weird team up, and they go on like a road trip together or something like that.
Could have been.
I kind of want to imagine, because that would actually allow you, like, one of the things about Cincinnati that's really great is the idea of, like, you have Santiago going undercover and actually getting to see Terry O'Quinn, like, interact and sort of, like, out in the world, as opposed to, like, in meeting rooms or delivering briefings and stuff. And I can't imagine, like, Carter watching the dailies and having worked with, like, O'Quinn, like, on The X-Files and on The Millennium to this point as well. I can't imagine him going, well, look, the proper use of Terry O'Quinn is standing in a briefing room completely disconnected from the rest of the cast. It's like, let's get him out there and let's have him actually do stuff. But, I mean, all of this is speculation, but that's kind of what I would have liked to see. Would I like to see an excuse for Santiago to be doing stuff?
It's ironic, then, that J.J. Abrams watched all the Chris Carter stuff with Terry O'Quinn and said, right, I know what we need to do with Terry O'Quinn. Have him in a have him doing briefings and giving out instructions in a suit for a whole season, which he does in Alias. Although he's great in Alias, but he doesn't get a lot to work with.
You've got to keep in mind then that after J.J. Abrams did that with Terry O'Quinn for a season, he's like, okay, fine, we see what he can do. Let's put him on an island and have him be like survive the one member of the team who can survive barehanded for a season, and then, you know, make him one of the focal characters of the show.
It's true. They did reward him in the end, because they gave him his, you know, his signature iconic role. So, you know, it's not all bad, really, I suppose.
Actually, yeah, there's a nice one. Hobbs and Locke together, actually, now that I think about it.
With Hume as well. Yeah, yeah. Desmond, Hume. Yeah.
You got to keep in mind, actually, there's another thing. It's like, there's your Carter-esque, because the second episode is called Leviathan as well, starring Tom Hobbs, in case you don't get Carter's sort of subtext, like, the world is a cruel and horrible place populated by terrible people because there's no religious belief or moral value in it. Mm. And actually, I wonder if that would have been something that Carter... I wondered, like... spiritually, because I know that Carter would have had a spiritual angle in some respects going into the show. Like, that's one of the things I would have been interested to see how it goes. Like, does Carter introduce religion and spirituality into the world of Harsh Realm? Does he sort of, like, does he do, like, the Westworld thing where he starts to suggest that the computer algorithms, like, actually have souls and stuff like that, and sort of follow that thread to its logical conclusion? Like, do you end up with maybe, like, Hobbes realizing that the people in the program are as real as the people outside the program and therefore need to be saved or something? That kind of stuff is kind of what... I'm more interested in sort of the thematics, like, where Carter would go thematically. Because there's a lot of rich stuff here.
There is. You're absolutely right. A few more comments and a couple of more questions. Kristen Sauter said, I liked it and wished it stayed around longer. I was happy when the DVD came out and we got more episodes. Was Mike Pinocchio a real person like Hobbes, or was he just a virtual character? And this was followed up on by Adam Silver on the same thread on Facebook, where he said, I believe the real Pinocchio is shown at the end of the pilot, but his face is scarred. Which is why he wants to stay in Harsh Realm. What do you think about this? Does this ring a bell here, this idea that Pinocchio was or wasn't real?
The thing is, the name sort of jumps out in that sort of like Carter thematic sort of way. I'm a real live boy sort of feeling to it. And he is right that it is, you basically do see him at the end, and he does have, I think he's missing a leg as well, possibly.
Which is what happens to him in 3%ers, isn't it, when he loses... He loses a leg, gets it back, but he loses a leg then as well, doesn't he?
So, yeah. And you have this, that's your sort of mirroring of the real world and the virtual world and the which is real and the which is not real sort of stuff. And it's, it's kind of interesting. I'm not sure. I'm actually surprised that, yeah. That said, I suppose Florence is your sort of your virtual character in terms of, like, she's your non-player character. So it would be redundant to reveal that Pinocchio is himself a virtual character, but... Yeah. I'm not sure. Again, the name.
It could have been a twist.
It
could have been a twist to come, really, which would have been interesting.
What if Hobbes was the virtual person and he just had the memories of the real Hobbes? That would be your brain bending twist,
Toby. That would be. Maybe it would have made him more interesting if he had a complete character change.
Yeah, we couldn't upload a personality in there, unfortunately. There was only so much memory space.
Yeah, there wasn't enough room. It would explain a lot, really. Finally, Kimon Karamidis, who's of course the guy behind Eat the Corn, brilliant resource for the X-Files. He mentioned about the sustaining Harsh Realm over 25 episodes, but we've kind of touched on that really, and that whole thing. He was curious, and he phrased this interestingly. How would this not have developed into a classic Messiah, in inverted commas, storyline? I think maybe he didn't mean to include the not there. I think it's the whole idea that Hobbs has been, he's the Christ figure, isn't he? You know, he's been sent in there, and it's even in the credits, isn't it? You know, I've come to save you.
Save you, yeah. It's basically it's that idea of like the Manus Domini, the hand of God, and the idea that like Harsh Realm is terrible because it's created by people and people are terrible, so you need a divine spark to go in there and sort of like, you know, resurrect and to inspire hope and decency. I mean, that is it. It's Leviathan, isn't it? It's the one with the the bounty hunter and stuff like that, where it's like, is there decency in this world? And that's your second episode. That's like Gehenna in sort of Millennium, and like Deep Throat in, you know, the X-Files. It's the, you know, okay, we've done the actual pilot, now we're just laying down the thematic dynamics. And it does feel like Carter would have been doing that. And like, you've got to keep in mind, at the same time that he was doing this on Harsh Realm, Mulder was like being turned into a literal half man, half alien, which in the X-Files is literal half man, half god, on like that sort of bridging the biogenesis three-parter. And you have like the cigarette smoking man around the same time in Enemy, which is credited obviously to William B. Davis, but I believe was heavily rewritten by Carter, which has an introduction in which the cigarette smoking man is presented as a literal angel saving a small boy, even though obviously one suspects he's a fallen angel in keeping with the taking the elevator up to work line. So I would not be surprised if this had developed in a sense of a Hobbes as Jesus type character, and particularly like spreading humanism and sort of religious belief and spirituality in the virtual world. I mean, you know, you have the priest in Camera Obscura, for example. You have the church imagery in Camera Obscura. I believe the nuclear weapon goes off somewhere near a church as well, doesn't it? And you have the image of the burning crucifix, if I remember correctly.
It might have been more literal, though, mightn't it? I mean, as opposed to, say, The X-Files, they sort of set up that idea that Mulder was a Christ figure, although at the same time...
He's literally crucified at the start of the seventh season. Like, he has a crown of thorns.
Exactly. So even though, you know, Smoking Man may say, you know, you're not Christ, you're not Hamlet, you're not even Ralph Nader, you know, which is a funny line, but he is, you know, he is turned into that sort of, you know, savior kind of Christ figure. But they don't really know what to do with that then. Where do you go there? Where do you go from that, really? So it's within that three-parter, and then it's sort of just ignored after that, really.
Yeah.
But with Harsh Realm, you can have, like you said, you can have Hobbs going around this realm, you know, maybe with his friend who has healing powers, you know, who can heal the sick and, you know, like you said, spreading all this humanism. It would have been a much more literal sort of Jesus parable than anything that Carter had done before.
Yeah. And I think Carter around this time was particularly, like, he's talked about this in interviews. This was around the time where he was close to faith, or close to wanting to believe, than he ever was. Like, he talks about how as the X-Files went on, he became gradually more, I don't know if he believed, but more interested in the idea of religious faith and religious belief as it went on. And you can sort of see that. And I think it reaches a pinnacle here at this point where you have this and the seventh season, the X-Files, happening sort of simultaneously. You also have to keep in mind that it's happening at the same time as like the turn of the millennium as well, where you have this sort of broader spiritual existential thing going on as well.
Yeah, it's at a particular point in that zeitgeist, isn't it? And it's, you know, that millennial unease, and it is, as we've said, you know, it's classic Carter in a way, even if it didn't become a success, you know, and even if it's a bit of a footnote now, really, isn't it? I mean, it's one of those things where people remember the X-Files, some people remember Millennium, even though that's underrated and underseen, sadly, but who really remembers Harsh Realm outside of the real, you know, Carter fanboy devotees?
Yay.
It's kind of just got lost to us. Yeah. It's kind of just got lost to history, really, hasn't it, a bit?
It really has. And I mean, it is interesting because it is very much pure Carter. I would still be sort of controversial and say that Millennium, or the first season of Millennium, is like as close to Carter the auteur, or like uncompromised auteur, as you will ever get. And I think like that's not even, I'm not the only one who believes that. I think that Kenneth Muir makes that argument very, very well. But I mean, here you have, this is undeniably Carter, but it's not a cohesive statement of itself. It feels like, the issue with Harsh Realm, the way that I've always seen Harsh Realm, and like, the, you know, you mentioned that I mentioned in my book as a cheap plug for the book, but like, this Harsh Realm, when I was writing about Harsh Realm, it was important in a way that like Millennium and the Lone Gunman aren't important to the actual, like, they're important to the evolution of the X-Files because they explain certain things that were happening behind the scenes, and, you know, you can compare and contrast certain themes, and, you know, they provide a stepping ground and evolution for the people who worked on them. Whereas writing about Harsh Realm feels more like season 7B, or, you know, like season 7, like Z of the X-Files, where it's like, it's this little nugget that's like tucked in and doesn't really make any sense outside of that context, in that not only are all of its themes very much of a moment and of a piece with what Carter was doing on its elder sibling show at that moment in time, but like its very nature of its existence, like the cancel that's designed to be replaced, you know, designed to be replacing the X-Files at the end of this year, but failing spectacularly because of sabotage that reflects like a broader, like horrible situation, car crash at Fox, which leads to the existence of the eighth season of the X-Files, but also like engaging with like stuff that Carter had been playing through the X-Files, like this idea of American identity, manifest destiny, the push westwards, the idea of like rugged, like, you know, the immigrants coming to the country, and that's largely what Harsh Realm is. It's these like people from the real world are basically settlers arriving on this virtual American continent and like basically claiming it as their own and carving it out and like literally exploiting and harvesting it in a way that plays almost as a metaphor for the colonization of America, which again is something that plays through the X-Files as well. Like I Harsh Realm doesn't make any sense on its own or as a definitive statement of itself, but it's informative and I think enlightening of what Carter was doing at that moment in time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, it fits within that window, doesn't it, really? And I think no more a good example of that is the X-Files episode Sign on Zit, where in the teaser Mark Rolston's character is sitting watching TV before his daughter gets kidnapped. And there's a scene with Hobbs and Pinocchio in the pilot running down a corridor. And he starts watching. And he goes,
"Hello, it is Ryan. And I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me. And you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is great. He says this is great.
If only he'd watched the next episode, he would have seen his, you know, would have seen himself.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Where was he? You know, when they were trying to get
their audience, you know,
the
figures.
Viewing figures. Yeah, you know, it's like, mate, I know your daughter got kidnapped, but come on, right? You know, where's your loyalty to Harsh Realm?
Yeah, could you at least set the TiVo? But there is this weird nesting of like Carter shows where, and it happens a lot in say the sixth season of the X-Files. So for example, you could argue that Harsh Realm, we know from Sign on Zit, is a show within the world of the X-Files. And we also know then that the X-Files is a show in the world of Millennium, because in an episode of the third season of Millennium, somebody's watching Killswitch. I think it's Closure, I'm not sure. But so I think, yeah, so it's this weird nesting doll effect where, you know, you have this level of virtual reality where it's not just a virtual world. It's actually like a television show within a television show within a television show.
It's Inception. You know, there's Chris Carter is sitting at the top of it with a spinning top, just having fun. That's basically what's happening. So yeah, Harsh Realm is something, I think, go and check it out. You know, after, I mean, you more than likely will have watched it already if you're listening to us, but...
Spoilers if you haven't.
Well, yeah, sorry about that. If you have been listening to us, go and check it out anyway, because even though it's only 9 episodes, you can get it really cheap. You know, if you dig around on Amazon, you'll find it. You'll get it really cheap. And, you know, it is worth watching as a Carter completist, you know. And then go to Darren's blog and read his extensive and brilliant reviews on each episode, because they add so much context to the kind of things we've been talking about this last hour or so. And they, you know, they're really, really in-depth and interesting. So they were a great companion to me. No, they were, as ever, they're great. They were a great companion to me watching these episodes and coming off the back of it and starting to think about it and everything. So,
well, what I want to say is, actually, if you are watching, like, if you're doing an X-Files rerun again, just fold Harsh Realm into watching the seventh season, and it works very, very well. It makes a lot more sense than just watching the 9 episodes, I'd argue. Yeah. So watch the 3 episodes, then watch the, you know, the opening of the seventh season, and then sort of interspace them as you wish.
It's a good strategy. I'm going to try that again when I do a full X-Files rewatch at some point. Although after the pod watch, I don't think I'm going to do that for about 10 years. but we'll see. But yeah, it's been really good talking Harsh Realm. So
my pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for coming on for this, Darren. Where then, direct people to where you are on Twitter and your blog and everything like that.
Perfect. You can find me online at Darren_Mooney at Twitter. I'm also at the movie blog with a 0 instead of an O in movie. So I think one of my friends pronounced it as them 0 vi blog, which works very, very well. But if you just Google my name, it'll come up very, very handy. I do reviews there. At the moment, I'm reviewing the Dublin Film Festival, or the films that I saw at the Dublin Film Festival, but I typically do reviews of Star Trek. I will at some point be doing reviews for the new season of The X-Files. I just have a mountain of work I'm trying to slowly climb my way out from under. I also host a podcast called The 250. Tony's actually been a guest on it several times, and hopefully will be again soon if we can organize something. Where we talk about the IMDb's top 250 movies of all time. We take one movie a week and we sort of talk through it at length in great detail. But it's good fun. I enjoy doing it, and I hope people enjoy listening to it. And my publisher would kill me if I didn't mention the book. I think Tony mentioned a lot of people have been very supportive, so you probably either have it already or have read it already, and then thank you very much for that. If you haven't, I'm going to bother you one more time, and I apologize for that. It's Opening the X-Files, A Critical History of the Original Series. You can find it on Amazon, but you can order it pretty much anywhere online, or even go into a local bookstore. They can order it behind the counter. I've seen it at the BFI bookshop, which is amazing. That's just a huge chuff sort of for me. That's something I'm very proud of. Brilliant. people have been great, and I'm very grateful for that.
Well, it's a brilliant book. It's fantastic. Anyone who is, and we've said this before on the podcast, but I'll happily say it as many times as possible, anyone who loves the stuff we're talking about, just you've got to get that book. It's essential. It's great. So and you know, just, it's not massively expensive. Go and buy it. It's well worth your time. So you know where we are, you know how to find us, but it'll be in the credits anyway, because I can't be bothered to say it every episode now, so I'll put it in the credits.
Very efficient.
Very efficient, yeah. No one will listen to it, but it's efficient anyway. But
sound design by Tony Black. Producer, Tony Black. Editing, Anthony Black.
That's what my mom calls me, so maybe she can do the editing next time.
But continuity by T. Black.
As I say, our patrons will get to listen to this first. So thank you guys for continuing to support the show. If you aren't a patron and you listen to this down the road, then you can support the show by going to patreon.com/thexcast, and you can get more enjoyable surprises like this every month. So that'd be great. Darren will be back at some point soon for brand new episodes. It'd be great to have him back on. Yay! And until we return, remember, as always, it's just a game. The X-Cast and X-Files podcast is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The X-Cast, and on Facebook if you type in The X-Cast, or at our group, X-Files Basement, an X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support the X-Cast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/thexcast. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/thexcast to to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at I am Will A Y E. Elsewhere on We Made This. Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast.
We are into our specials between Series 3 and Series 4, and I am your regular host, Mark. With me at this time, you're not Kurt.
Why, shipwrecked and comatose? What's Red Dwarf? Who's Kurt?
Oh dear. Hello, Fraser.
Hello, Mark. How's it going?
So this is our very special, right in the childhood, Shipwrecked and Comatose crossover.
Woo, 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 woo. Crossing the streams. They tell you not to do that in Ghostbusters. But then that's what actually saves the day. So maybe we should cross the streams.
We are Starfleet.
A lot of times we have trouble facing profound grief and trauma in our past. So it is interesting. I think it was a, you know, this sort of well-intentioned, you know, sort of benchmark for him to clear as,
sure.
as a developing being. And he unfortunately kind of had this arrested development because of the trauma that he experienced. And then, you know, if someone had shown up a year later, 2 years later, you know, maybe not so bad, but the burn happened and that wasn't an option anymore.
Pick a disc.
So yeah, I do think that concept of just like normal music getting associated with Christmas is much more of a British thing, which I find interesting. The Love Actually soundtrack, I mean, this might be entirely because of how much I like Love Actually and how much I associate it with Christmas, but definitely like Jump for My Love or even Too Lost in You, to be honest, because Sugar Babes weren't big in the US like whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So I know them from this song and I know this song from Love Actually that I do think when I hear that my head does kind of go to Christmas time. But I, again, like, I don't know if that's just more of me than normal people.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network. Till we return, remember, as always, it's just a game.
As always?
Maybe not as always. Okay, this once.
This is a surprise launch.
It's the soft reboot. Yeah. It's the soft reboot for Harsh Realm.
Yeah.
This podcast, the X-Cast, is the soft reboot for the... What would you call a Harsh Realm podcast?
A game would probably be the one to go for.
Yeah, maybe. I still like your Where in the World Is... I
just like the idea of the podcast getting cancelled after 3 ratings and getting burnt off on wherever podcasts go.
Probably would happen, yeah.